John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Now played 8 minutes of the first period. It is still nothing, nothing. Yossi spins with the puck. Sends it in now for Johansson. Breaking in! He scores! Ryan Johansson with the backhander. Here's a shot blasted. Rebound try Bonino! And that one stopped by Markstrom. On the right half wall. Picked up again. Looking. Gronlund. One-timer to score. Gronlund sets up Kelly Yarncroke to tie the game at two. Here it comes to Hamhuis. His shot deflected to the corner. Schaller couldn't get it. Now quick turn, and the shot on the score. The shot taken by Yarncroke, and the rebound deflected up over the shoulder of Markstrom. Preds are on the board, now down by two. And the shot goes into the Predators' empty net at 17:58. For Vancouver's sixth goal of the night.
It's frustrating. I mean, everybody wants to win here. It's frustrating when it's not going your way, but you gotta find a way to get out of it. You gotta stick together. You gotta put in the work, and we gotta be desperate.
Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall here on a Friday. We've got a huge weekend of football to get to as the Tennessee Titans will take on the Jacksonville Jaguars at home, of course, on Sunday. You've got the Tennessee Volunteers in a really fascinating game at Missouri. Both teams 5-5, and obviously lots of pressure on both coaches. We'll get to all of that today. Of course, there was more controversy in the NFL yesterday that I really just have no desire to wade into. I have no desire because I don't think you have to have a take on everything. We'll get to that in just a second here on the program. However, last night the Nashville Predators did more Nashville Predator things, which is this one was another level though too. This one was another level. They lose to Vancouver 6-3, I believe. I'm not even sure the final score matters, because, I know you're going to hear a lot of people say, I feel like I can already predict some of the takes on the Preds from last night, and one of them I think is going to be excuse making, which is because all the goals were deflections. They were, you know, the power play for Vancouver is spectacular. They are undefeated and unstoppable against the Nashville Predators, apparently. But I don't need to hear excuses about the deflections. I get it. There were a lot of bad bounces. You put yourself in a bad situation to lose. Chris Mason said it about 100 times. Bad bounce, bad bounce, bad bounce, but you can't take the penalties. You can't take the penalties. You can't put yourself that many times on the penalty kill against a team that clearly has your penalty kill figured out. They scored 3 goals against you last Saturday. They come back and they score, 3 more? 4 more? Does it matter? Every time they went on the power play, they scored. And yes, I get it. 4 deflected goals, 5 power play goals in a game. Incredible. Just one of those sports situations where you just go, man, I'm not sure I've ever seen this one before. So I get that. And we can, you know, that feels like one camp of thinking and one line of thinking. That's one extreme, being a homer and defending the Nashville Predators by saying everything was deflected. So just a bad night, just unlucky. Well, no, Pekka's been pulled 3 times now in the last couple of weeks. You've lost 8 out of 9 games. You've lost 6 straight. I don't need to hear any excuses. I don't want to hear anything about deflections today. That's not that. It can be part of the overall analysis. But the overall analysis is you're not very good. You're a 500 hockey team. I said it on Wednesday after they lost. You get boat raced by Chicago. You're just not a good team right now. It doesn't mean you're not going to be a good team in the future, but you're not a good team right now. And that's okay. It's okay in November. It's not okay in February and March. But you're just not a great team right now. You're not even good. You're not even above average. You are definition of average. You're still in 6th place. Minnesota's about to catch you. Again, 1 week of hockey can turn all this around. Here's the other end of the spectrum and the extremes, and I don't want to hear this one either. So, I'm just going to decide. I'm not going to listen to Preds fans who are homers that are going to sit here and say, the deflections are the reason we lost. Oh, it's unlucky. Not in the middle of a six-game losing streak when you've lost 8 out of 9 and take too many penalties. Like, five power play goals for the opposition is not just luck. Some of it is. That's fine. That's one end of the extreme. The other end of the extreme is Peter Laviolette's lost the room and he needs to be fired. That's not accurate either. So I don't see a team that has given up on its coach or, again, they always say lost the room in hockey. I know Toronto has fired their coach, and it's very in vogue in the NHL to fire your coach early, mid-season, late season, whatever, because then teams have these miraculous turnarounds. St. Louis last year, Pittsburgh's won a cup with a fired coach. It's very chic in the NHL to fire your coach and think that you're going to be a better team. I know I'm very conservative when it comes to firing coaches. I just don't think that that end of the extreme is accurate either. I am not seeing a team yet that appears to be not playing hard for their coaching staff. I don't see that. So those ends of the extreme are sort of the ends of the extreme that I just don't want to hear about from Preds fans. I'm not saying that you aren't justified in maybe having those feelings projecting out the team, right? Because again, they could be very, very good. And so all the homers who are saying, hey, it was just deflections last night, don't worry about it, it's not that big a deal. You know, they go out and acquire somebody at the deadline, maybe a better third defenseman, maybe a net front presence, whatever. You know, they round into form, they find some groove, and all of a sudden they're a surging hockey team and their talent is playing up to the standards that we expect of them. And that can happen. And if that does happen, I wouldn't be surprised. And I don't think that that would make the people who are sitting here today saying, don't worry about it, it's just a bunch of deflections, don't worry about it, they're going to be fine, they're going to be fine, they're going to be fine. That would make them right, because that means that's where they would end up. And if this team continues to struggle and spends another 2 or 3 or 4 weeks losing hockey games and is under 500 and is in 6th or 7th place in the division by the time we get to Christmas, then the people who are saying, I wonder if Peter Laviolette has lost the room, those people will be right. But we are not there yet on either one of those two situations. So I'm not going to go to extremes. As I hear Billy Joel playing in the back of my head, I just don't think you can do it right now. I don't think it's time for it. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's productive. I think what's productive is you can look at this team and say, they need to be better in a lot of different ways. They're good on 5-on-5. Their special teams need to be fixed. The power play has been better. It wasn't that good last night. It wasn't good on Tuesday night. But special teams need to be fixed. They have got to get pressure on a goaltender on the other side of the ice. And this is where I don't care about the deflection argument to some degree. Part of the reason all those deflections happened, there was traffic in front of Pekka last night in the first two periods. There were dudes standing. In fact, one of the deflections was a double screen. They had so much net front presence in front of our goal that there are two guys standing there. Not just one. And then you watch the Predators play on offense, and there's nobody. There's nobody that's standing in the dirty areas. There's no traffic in front of the net. It's what Crispy said was the issue on Tuesday night. There's no traffic in front of the net. So there are things we can discuss that I think, in my opinion, are far more productive discussions than, they were all deflections last night, it's going to be fine, don't worry about it. Or the other end of the extreme, which is, Peter Laviolette's terrible, the coaching staff's terrible, they all need to be fired. Like that, neither one of those are accurate right now. There will be a time, and this is what I do not know. I do not know where the panic button time is on the calendar. I do not think we are there yet. I don't see a team. They played incredibly hard on Tuesday night against Winnipeg. They were battling in this game for the majority of the first and second period until the power play thing started happening. You could point to some games, even in this losing streak, where they played hard and played well. I think it is somewhat fluky that on any given night they are losing in a different way, whether it's goaltending one night, special teams the next night, defense the next night, offense the next night. They're losing in every possible way, which, again, if it continues, then we can start to discuss the coaching staff. But I don't think we're there yet. I still think you got two huge games with St. Louis coming up. Saturday and Monday, respectively, home and home, with a little break in between. Then you get Vegas on Wednesday. This is a huge stretch here at home. It's a huge stretch. So you've got the things that are hanging in the balance over the next couple of weeks are huge. And so I'm not there yet on any extremes. I'm not there yet on any, these conversations about how all is lost or they're going to be totally fine. Neither one of those two conversations is productive. It's all in the middle somewhere. And it's a couple more weeks of action before I can decide, hey, one way or the other on one of these things. So we'll have to see. I'm not ready to make any definitive statements about anything, and so I'm still a couple of weeks away from having any commentary or thoughts on either one of these two extremes, which is that the Preds are going to be totally fine or that the coaching staff is terrible and needs to be fired. I don't want to hear either side of those extremes today, and I know Preds fans are raw right now, so I get it. They're not playing good hockey, but that's where I fall.
Well,
hey, Derek.
Hey, what's going on? People avoid 24 because they've cut it off. People don't know how to drive when it's raining, but it is what it is. I'm watching a game yesterday, and they get the first goal, and I'm thinking, okay, everything that they preached, they've taken it, and they're going to implement it on ice. And then, they get one goal, and I turn away, and I must have been doing something, and when I look back, I heard Crispy and them say, well, they're down a goal. I'm thinking like, huh? Down a goal? I just saw them score one goal. Where did the second goal come from?
The power play.
Yeah, well, when you're not disciplined and you do things that cause your team to be at a man disadvantage, that's what happens. And I'm listening to Willie and Chris yesterday, and they were talking about some of the power play goals and, oh, it went off of this guy's skate and went off of that guy's skate. And they were absolutely right. But when there's an action, there's a reaction. There's a cause and effect. You're not in that position if you're not in a power play. So I couldn't care less if the goal went off of one of the fans and went into the net.
Oh, that'd be bad.
Yeah, it would be bad, real bad.
I would care about the fan. Yeah,
I would care about the fan, but I wouldn't care that the goal went in.
Yeah. That's an unlucky bounce.
Yes. But
off the gentleman's forehead.
But while he's eating popcorn. But
didn't spill his beer, though.
That would have been amazing. But the fact remains, had you not been a man down, you wouldn't be in that situation.
And some bad penalties, too.
Craig Smith's penalty. Just undisciplined penalties.
Craig Smith should be – he should have to sit down a game for that penalty.
It was
you make a bad pass, and then you're so angry about it that you slash the guy.
Like, for what?
It's one of the worst penalties I've ever seen in hockey.
And it's just
– Craig knew it. He was pretty pissed at himself.
But it's stuff like that when you're losing, you reach.
Yeah.
When you hadn't been winning, you start to reach. When things are not going well, the minute things are not going well, you reach. And then you start getting, as we say in foot, you get stupid penalties. You get unnecessary penalties. You get undisciplined penalties. Those penalties that they got were undisciplined penalties.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's all they were.
More than one of them, at least.
Exactly.
Probably three, if not most of them. The Fabbro penalty at the beginning, okay, but Fabbro's second penalty, even though I like the fact. Here's the other angle, and there's one other really big discussion we need to have, and this is one I think that's fair to have about this team, and it's not just the penalties or the deflections or the offense or the defense or the goaltending or all the things we've talked about as to why this team is struggling. There's one more thing we have not yet really discussed. We've maybe mentioned it in passing in sort of a casual way, but I want to be more specific about it, and I'll explain myself on the other side. Derek Mason, Braden Gall. The theme of today's show, by the way, will be you don't have to have an extreme take today. All right? Like, I think the only extreme takes that we need are about the Titans winning or losing over the weekend. That's an extreme situation. If they lose, their season could be over. If they win, their season is still alive. Otherwise, Vols, college football, Predators, there's no reason. Miles Garrett, there's no reason to go to extremes today. The opposite is where I'm at. We'll hear from Rocco Grimaldi when we come back, and the one other major issue with the Nashville Predators that we need to discuss, will it affect this team moving forward, and can they solve it? We'll do that. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Man, that's a blast from the past right there. That's so good.
What is the theme today?
That's so good.
Excuse me. Who? What is the theme today?
So, oh, for the music?
Yeah, for the music.
I don't know. That sounds angry.
It's Friday, so we got a
funky Friday.
I would call that 90s hip hop. Right there.
I could play some 90s hip hop, but
that's what that is.
Let's go.
I pulled some stuff already.
Oh, well, if you already pulled it, then don't worry about it.
All right, we're cool.
Yeah, we're cool.
I trust you, man. We're cool.
Yeah,
we cool.
We gonna have a good time. It's Friday.
Yes.
We got
to lighten the mood.
Say we can't overreact, so we got to just relax. You know what I'm saying? So
I do think that I think all across this country today in sports talk radio, people are going to overreact. It's just going to be all overreaction to Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph. And I am sorry. I am not interested in your take on Mason Rudolph and Myles Garrett. I'm just not. We'll get into that, and I'll tell you why coming up. We obviously have a huge game with the Vols and Missouri Tigers, Titans and Jags. We got a lot of stuff to get to. I think the theme on the show today is don't go to extremes for any of these topics, with the exception of the Titans. This is a huge, huge game for the Titans, so I think we can discuss how the gravity of the situation for the Tennessee Titans. I think is cool. We can discuss that. I think all this other stuff, people are going to go to extremes, and it's not. You don't need to. It's okay to just not have an opinion that's really overly passionate about what happened with Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph. It's okay not to have a take and just move on from your life and just let them deal with it, because it will never get solved. All right, Preds, last point here on this Preds, and I want to see what you think about this, Derek, because you're a guy that famously has gotten into fights at a Super Bowl during practice because you're a passionate competitor. That is what you are, and that's what you got dog in you, man, when you played in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another thing. We've talked about the Predators need to get physical. Somebody punched Philip Forsberg in the face yesterday.
Yes. Ooh, that was just ooh.
They were pushing you around all night. It was part of their strategy. Winnipeg, you held your own against Winnipeg. And Winnipeg's a bigger, more physical team, frankly, than Vancouver, although Myers, ironically, was on the Winnipeg team that beat you 2 years ago, the defenseman. He just popped Philip Forsberg right in the face. And I'm not, like, the guys came to his defense, and there was some pushing and shoving. But that's like taking your manhood right there. So I think some of this is a finesse hockey team that people are going to punch around a little bit until they show everyone else in the NHL that they're not going to take it. And I don't know, like, that's just a mentality thing. Like, you got to step up and defend yourself at some point. So I think that's going to be a growing concern, is that teams are going to come in here and try to push you around.
You know what I was thinking when you said that? The first thing that came to mind was the song, We're Not Gonna Take It.
You worked with Darren and Weird Willie for long enough.
Yeah, you did. That's definitely down there.
See,
the D&D Avenue.
I'm trying to get Sturgill into your blood.
Yes.
You know, you took all that 80s hair metal from Darren and Willie, and that's why it's in your brain.
That's what came to mind when you said that.
Yep.
But no, you're right.
He's the best player on your team, and he just got punched in the face.
You're right. You know what? When it happened, of course, no one really saw it because they had the cameras everywhere else. You just saw Forsberg on the ice.
It was a sneaky little punch, too.
The more they start to talk about it, and then when they say, well, someone's going to the penalty box, and the way Forsberg was looking, I thought it was an embellishment. But then once they re-showed it, replayed it, he got punched square in the face and he just like got up and didn't nobody really.
I mean, there was a little bit of like
a little bit of jostling.
Hey,
hey, did you punch my friend? Hey, Forsberg, you all right? All right, we're good. I understand. Okay, because of what was going on, I can see why the retaliation wasn't as bad as we might have thought it should have been, considering the best player got punched in the face.
Yeah, it happened quickly, and it was still kind of in the framework of the play, so like everyone's still focused on their jobs.
I understand why I didn't have it. But once you see the replay, there has to be somewhere in that game where I don't care if it's at the end of the game and you know you're down 5-3.
Yeah, that needed to happen.
Yeah, we need to punch you back in the face.
There needed to be a fight, honestly.
We need to punch
kidding.
You back in the face because, we didn't forget what you did to the best player earlier. Now we have no opportunity to win, so I'm going to punch everybody in the
face. Which is like the most hockey thing of all time. When you go after another team's star player, you best believe somebody's coming back after you. Like, that's how hockey works. And again, it's not just necessarily about the one thing. That was just the most egregious moment.
Yeah.
It's about 60 minutes of a team punking you.
Physically. They pushed them around.
Yeah.
And I can say the Predators, they did come out Because we talked yesterday about coming out fast, coming out fast. How do you come out? It was yesterday, the day before that. How do you come out with your hair on fire? How do you get a fast start? Well, they got a fast start, but they didn't sustain that fast start. Because the minute they got that fast start, they put themselves in a position of, they were not in a position of strength. Right. Because they put themselves in a power play. So you start off fast, and then you put yourself in a power play.
Yeah, and so 5-on-5, again, and Matt Duchesne said this after the game. We'll hear from him in just a second, too. But they've been pretty good 5-on-5 most of the season. They were good last night, 5-on-5. But you can't give up 5 power play goals. I don't care how many of them are deflections. So bad penalties or not, teams. I'm just saying, I'm starting to see teams come in here and have no fear of retaliation when it comes to physicality. They don't have any problem coming in here and, you know, hey, we're going to be a little physical with this Predators team and see how they handle it. And they're not handling it right now. I'm not saying they can't figure it out. They probably will. But that's something that's going to have to happen. Rocco Grimaldi, of course, a little guy, but a guy who punches up clearly in his weight class. He has no problem mixing it up a little bit with guys much bigger than him. Chase McCabe caught up with Rocco Grimaldi after the loss.
Rocco, special teams, obviously the story of this game. When you guys look at the penalty kill and how it's going right now, I mean, what do you see just, you know, the minutes after this game?
Yeah, no, it's frustrating because I thought we played a good game when it was 5-on-5. I mean, we probably outchanced them and outshot them 2-1. Just too many penalties. It's something that we talked about was discipline. And, you know, it was, you know, the way we shot ourselves in the foot today. We just weren't disciplined enough. And obviously they're a good power play. They got a lot of shooters, a lot of guys who can make plays. And, yeah, that was the problem. We took too many penalties.
Is that what is so frustrating about this stretch right now? You guys are getting the chances. You're getting the shots. It's just things aren't going your way.
Yeah, it seems like almost every game we're finding a different way to lose, and that's why it's so frustrating. It's not just one thing. Like, I'll stay out of the box. It was like, this game was stay out of the box, but last game was something different. So, yeah, it's frustrating times, but we just I've said it so many times, I feel, this week. We just got to stick with it and, you know, stay disciplined when things are, you know, not going our way. You know, we're obviously getting mad and not very happy on the bench, so we just got to stick together and stay disciplined.
It's been said time and time again how close this team is, and it's almost like a family. Is that what can help bring you guys through something like this?
Absolutely. I mean, every team's going to go through a tough stretch, you know, whether it's 5 games in a row or 10, whatever. I mean, teams go through tough stretches. Like, look at St. Louis last year, where they were in January or whatever. We got to dig ourselves out of this hole, and obviously we can't sit here and talk about it. We just got to take it one game at a time. We're going into St. Louis in a couple of days. It's going to be a huge division game for us, a huge game for us to start digging our way out. We're not just going to jump out of the hole with one win. It's going to take everyone kind of just digging a little bit at a time, and hopefully we can put a different streak together.
Rocco, I appreciate it. Thanks. Let's send it back upstairs.
Rocco Grimaldi there with the Chas Macabre, the Maccababe, the Constable, Chase McCabe there after the game. And a lot of cliches, but all of it's true. I mean,
here's the thing that when you start to talk about sports, people want to kind of make the correlation to family. And in a sense, yeah, you're right, because you spend a lot of time with these guys. But everybody doesn't have the same relationship with one another. You know, in a family, everybody has the same relationship. If I'm, you know, me and my son and my daughter, I mean, there's no, you know, if we're all together, we're all together. It's not like you over here, you're doing your thing, you're doing your thing. No, we're all together. And when things go down, you know, we talk about it, you know, as a group. In regards to the Predators, yes, it is a family. But these guys, the family thing ain't going to keep you. It's not going to get you to playing better hockey. It's not. I know that it's the cliche thing to say. And it, I mean, Rocco, how else was he supposed to answer it?
Right. Yeah.
But the family thing is not going to start winning you hockey games.
Or football games.
Because they've been a family forever.
Yeah.
You know, these guys, it's not like all of a sudden now, okay, we're a family now, is going to get us through this rough patch. No, what's going to get you through the rough patch is if you stop doing undisciplined things.
Yeah.
Is if you pay attention to detail.
Well, what do you always say? You're either coaching it.
Exactly.
Or you're allowing it to happen. And there better be some yelling and screaming about the penalties they took last night.
Absolutely.
Those were terrible mistakes.
They were just bad. Yeah. They were just bad penalties. And there's no way around it.
Yeah. Listen, not a good game. Not a good streak. Not a good time to be a Preds fan. They're an average team. They're literally 500. They're sixth in the division. They're a point out of last place. Whatever you want to say, all of it can be fixed in a week of good hockey. But you got to go out and execute. So we'll see. We'll change gears when we return. Josh Ward going to join us. I know he just had his second child, so congratulations to Josh Ward. We'll talk Tennessee, Missouri. Again, I can't believe I'm saying this, but you don't have to go to extremes with this Tennessee Volunteer team in this game. We'll explain, and we'll talk to Josh Ward about it when we return right here on Morning Drive. Morning Drive, Derek Mason, Brayden Gaul here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tennessee travels to Missouri. 2-5 against Missouri since Missouri has entered the conference. Only one victory in Como, as they say, Columbia, Missouri. Josh Ward joining us here on the program, fresh off child number two. First of all, how's the family doing, Josh? Happy and healthy, I hope.
Yeah, thank you. Everybody's doing well. Max is the newcomer to the family.
Oh,
and,
Max.
Yeah, he likes to party between 11 p.m. and 5 a.m. So those are peak hours.
Is Max short for something, or is it just Max?
Maximus?
Yeah, it is Max, but the nickname opportunities are endless.
Yes.
Okay. Maximus,
yes.
For Max-a-lot. I mean, we can keep going. So very excited about that.
Just call him.
Just the dad joke opportunity.
I like Sir Max-a-lot. I like that.
Yeah, with two kids, you are now full in dad joke mode. There's no question about that.
I got a few good ones for you.
Welcome to the club, Josh. Congratulations on you and the family, man. Who's going to start at quarterback for Tennessee? Who should start at quarterback for Tennessee?
Well, it looks like Jarrett Garantano is going to start, and I would say that he should. There is, of course, the question, wait, should he really? Because he's played really well off the bench, so keep him in that six-man role. We've kind of joked this week that maybe you still run Juwan Jennings on play number one and then send Jarrett into the game on play number two, and I really wouldn't be opposed to that. But I think it's been pretty clear since the start of October that overall – Jarrett Garantano has been Tennessee's best quarterback. That doesn't mean that Brian Maurer hasn't done some good things. I think in that Georgia game, very early in the Mississippi State game, he showed what he's able to do. Alabama as well, but mistakes have been there, and you know the numbers aren't close. It's a runaway in favor of Garantano. The first month of the season was a really big disappointment for Jarrett and for the team, but since then he has played a lot better. That's part of the reason that Tennessee has played a lot better, and I think that. Also, Jarrett has regained the trust of his teammates, and that's a big part of it as well, and the coaches have more faith in him. So I think it'll be Jarrett. Now, if he struggles against Missouri, Jeremy Pruitt has shown that he will make a change. So we could see multiple quarterbacks, but it's going to be Jarrett's job to lose, I would say, this weekend and over the next couple of weeks.
So, Josh, with that, because you look at this team, and for the last three or four games, they played well. And they put themselves in a position to win possibly seven games, make it to a bowl game, win eight. And I think that would be, more than satisfactory for the Vol fans and alumni. But has there been anything that Jeremy Pruitt has done in this, you know, three, four game span that has caused this change for the Vols? Or has it just been, you know, he's been business as usual and the team just sort of picked up on what was going on?
Well, in the summer, Jeremy was talking about the connection he had been able to establish with the players, and he talked about not doing a good enough job with that in the first year. And I think when Jeremy Pruitt was talking about that, like at SEC Media Days, that was a big talking point. I don't think it had really happened yet. I think that maybe Tennessee was on the way to getting there. But in the first month, you know, there were some real concerns about players understanding, one, on the field, what's being asked of them by the coaches. And then from there, maybe leadership within the locker room as you're hearing talk of finger pointing, especially after that Florida loss when that month had just been a disaster. But since then, I do think things have come together. The players continued to buy in. That's probably why the switch to Brian Maurer was good before that Georgia game. He had 2 weeks to get ready, and Jeremy Pruitt did send a message that, look, if things aren't working, I am going to change things up. And he did that at quarterback when in August, Jarrett Garantano was the only starter that Pruitt would name. So he showed that he is willing to adjust for his players. But I don't know that was there in year one. And then I would also give a lot of credit to the veterans who stepped up on this team. Darrell Taylor called himself out after September and said, I have to play better, and he has. Juwan Jennings, Marquez Callaway, Daniel Batuli, they have all helped lead the way. And then again, Jarrett, who's a fourth-year junior, he's helped with that. So I think that Jeremy Pruitt did a better job of establishing or strengthening the connection with his players, which he struggled to do a year ago.
Josh Ward joining us here from WNML in Knoxville, and it's interesting. I think there's a lot less pressure on Tennessee in this game than I would have ever told you there was going to be at any point during the season. This game has changed so significantly as to how we view it. Now Missouri has scored one touchdown in 12 quarters. The Dewlander has scored 100 points on Tennessee the last 2 years, but I think the way Tennessee's defense, 8 shutout quarters out of the last 10, Missouri can't score, it feels like an opportunity here for Jeremy Pruitt's defense to actually impose some will here.
It really is. And with the struggles that Missouri has had, I think that over a 2-week span, don't you give Jeremy Pruitt the benefit of the doubt with the way that his defense has improved, that it should be prepared. The guys are fresher. You know, if they played this game a week ago, there's even greater concern about the health of a few players, and that's still worth monitoring with guys like Bryce Thompson at corner and Henry To'oto'o at linebacker. But getting 2 weeks mentally, physically, I think that should help as well. The way that Missouri's offense has had issues, and for a number of reasons, the Kelly Bryant injury was a big part of it as well, but that's not all of it. It's, to me, kind of stunning. And you think about the Missouri game against Tennessee the last couple of seasons. Missouri has had the back-to-back 50-17 wins. So you're looking at 100 points in 2 games against Tennessee. This season, Missouri has 99 points scored. So they have not been able, over 10 games, to put up what they've done in the last 2 games against Tennessee. On the flip side, Missouri could say, hey, this is a team we've handled the last couple of years. We can get right here. I can't get away from the trend of what we've seen over the last 4 to 6 weeks, and that is Missouri really struggling and Tennessee really getting better and playing better up front on defense. And I think that's why Tennessee should feel really good going into the weekend.
Now, with all that was going on, prior to, the last couple of weeks with Garantano and, some question on whether, him being a disciplined player, meaning sticking to the script and things going wrong, and then the big debacle in Alabama, was there ever a worry that Garantano at the end of the year, because he still has a year left, and we just assumed that once Marr got in, he was going to be the guy they looked to next year. Was there any thought of Garantano possibly transferring at the end of the season?
Yeah, and I still think that's a question at the end of the year. What happens? I don't think anybody knows. And as the quarterback position has changed during the season, I think speculation moving forward of what will happen has been adjusted along the way. And when Brian Maurer took over, and he did play well at times, as I was mentioning, I think most people said, okay, it's Brian Maurer moving forward, and then it's him versus Harrison Bailey next season, the talented quarterback who's committed. But since he's dealt with the injuries and Jarrett has come back in and played well, I talk about coaches, players believing in him again. Jarrett really loves Tennessee, and I don't think anybody wanted to see this happen, especially him and his family, who has really been connected to Tennessee. So I don't know exactly what happened moving forward. I wouldn't take anything off the table. Let's see how these next couple of games go as well. Let's see how the season closes out. But for Jarrett, I still think he has to look at it at the end of the season and say, okay, what is my opportunity? Am I the guy next year? Or do I have to battle not only Brian Maurer but Harrison Bailey coming in? Am I going to experience next year what I have this season? If this year is going to be like next year from a competition standpoint, maybe he doesn't want to do that. But also, if he leaves, then he's guaranteeing himself 5 different offensive coordinators and 5 years in college. Is that something he wants to experience as well? So I think a lot of things are still on the table. But if Jarrett can finish out on a strong note and can help Tennessee win 2 more games against Missouri and Vanderbilt, then the possibility of him being here next year, which I would have kind of ruled out a month ago, I think is back on the table, and that's something to consider. And for Tennessee, what a story that would be, considering what we were talking about a month ago. And quick correction, Missouri's 99 points, that's an SEC play. I said all season, that's an SEC play. But the Kelly Bryant versus Jarrett Garantano matchup, that'll be something we might be talking about, because Kelly came in, and he was the guy that was supposed to kind of keep Missouri's offense going the way that it has, and it hasn't worked out that way. So he's trying to reestablish what he's doing. And then Jarrett has somewhat done that the last few weeks in a backup role. Now he's trying to do that again as a starter for Tennessee for the first time in more than a month.
Just give us a quick sense, Josh, as to how Knoxville would be if they finished off on a 6-game winning streak, 5-3 in the SEC. I know you can't erase what happened in weeks 1 and 2, but what would Knoxville be like if they finished the season at 7-5 with all those streaks and that record?
there is the, you know, it counts what you've done most recently. And at the start of the season, the talk at the time, Tennessee's 0-2, Tennessee's 1-3, and 1-4, you know, this season could be an all-time disaster. At the beginning of the year, if you hear 7-5 is the final record, I think most people say, okay, I'll take it. And then you move on, and you hope to be much better the next year. But 7-5 probably feels different because of the early season struggles and because of the improvement. And, you know, Tennessee's kind of taken advantage of teams that have hit some rough spots. Mississippi State was not playing well when they came into Knoxville. South Carolina's had its issues. Missouri right now is struggling. But Tennessee's taken advantage of that. If Tennessee gets to 7-5, despite the losses at the beginning of the season, I think fans are even happier now than they would have been if you have your ups and downs all the way through. I think finishing on a really positive note would create even more optimism among the fan base of what Tennessee might be able to do in 2020. And then at that point, let's see what Tennessee's able to do next year.
Josh, always a pleasure, man. Congrats to you and the family, and we do appreciate it. Thanks a lot, bud.
Hey, you got it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Absolutely. Josh Ward. I you know, we talk all the time, Derek, about in the NFL, it's not as important as to how you look each week. Uh-huh. I mean, we do analyze that a lot. But at the end of the year, it's your schedule, and everybody's schedule is about the same in the NFL, and you are what your record says you are. Same thing in the NHL. In most professional sports, you are what you say, your record says you are. In college, it's very different. It's uh-huh. It's how did you get to that record? How did you look in the process, right? Even the committee looks at one team and says, oh, they've been playing close games. They're not as good as a team that's been dominant, right? The uh-huh. eye test matters. So I can tell you how you get to 7-5 matters, but I'm not sure anyone anticipated this path to 7-5. And so what does this path to 7-5, should they get there, what does that look like for Tennessee? We'll discuss the Missouri game as well when we return. Morning Drive. Morning Drive.
I can see my mom electric sliding this morning right now.
So let it whip.
Do you do the high note part, though?
So let it whip, whip it, baby. Let's whip it right. You ain't never knew that song, did you? My mom used to play that song. My parents.
Oh, hell yeah.
Not my mom, just my parents. My mom was more of the music person. My mom had a band.
Isn't it funny you get
a group, but then she had kids, so there you go.
It's amazing how you get certain things from certain parents. Obviously, we have interests in life, shockingly,
yeah.
and parents have different interests. You never really view your parents as regular humans.
I know. Right?
I don't know my mom and dad, like what they would be like when they were like 28 years
until
old.
Until I went
and,
to that Frankie Beverly and Mays concert, uh-huh. that's when you get to see
your mom.
the inner mom of my mother. Like, that's the real
heart. I never thought my parents were cool until I started really understanding music.
Right.
Like, really, because when I used to listen, it was like, oh, that music, like, seriously, let me put on some Run DMC or something. But right. Then as you started to appreciate music, my parents were pretty cool.
That's the thing. That's the exact same thing happened to me. Like, because I grew up in the grunge rock era uh-huh. and that same hip-hop era. So I'm listening to, you know, Cash Money Millionaires in high school, which is not exactly high-level, highbrow, you know.
Your parents are not listening to that.
And they're yeah. definitely not listening to Nirvana either. But at that time, I'm like, man, you guys are so not cool. You have no clue. And what really happened in my life was my dad gave me my music passion. And he taught me on Michael Jackson. He taught me on Neil Young. He taught me, which is very different probably than what your parents taught you. Mm-hmm. He taught me Traveling Wilburys, which was, that was the first album I ever owned, which was, of course, Roy Orbison, Tom Petty, Bob Dylan,
oh, wow.
and George Harrison, and Josh Lynn. And so, like, one of the most talented bands ever assembled. And then I realized, as I got older out of college, like, oh, wait a second, he had some pretty good taste.
Yeah.
Like Neil Young, Michael Jackson, Traveling Wilburys is pretty good to grow up on. Like, that being the first music you ever listened to, like, man, I should give my dad a little bit more credit, but I don't want to. love you, Dad. Here's the deal with the Vols. I think if you'd have told me 7-5 at the end of the year, I don't think anyone would have gone out of their, like, I don't think anyone would have lost their mind about that. I think everybody would have said, yeah, it's possible. 6-6, 7-5. I think my prediction was 6-6. So 7-5 is really not outlandish. It certainly is a little bit overachieving. But we talk about how you get there in college. It's about how do you look? Are you competitive against the good teams? I said all summer, I'm going to evaluate Tennessee on how they play in the swing games. That was Mississippi State, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt, in my opinion, at home. Also, Kentucky and Missouri on the road. There's a chance they could win every single one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're just using those games, you have to say this was a really, really good season. But I never would have told you they would have lost. If you had told me 7-5, I would have said, all right, 4-0 in the non-conference, and then they win a couple swing games and they get to 7-5. And that would be considered a pretty decent season. Still not 100% sure where this is going, because Butch Jones went from 5 wins to 7 wins in his first 2 seasons. And so I don't think anybody would have told you, oh yeah, 7-5, but they're going to go 5-3 in the SEC. They're going to win 6 straight to finish the year. They're going to win every single swing game in the conference that matters. But they're going to lose in 2 horrendous ways to 2 really bad teams. I don't think anybody would have told you that's the path that Tennessee would have taken to 7-5.
No, not at all. You know, you look at what they did, because I think that first stretch of games, that first three games, we felt, okay, you know, looking at this schedule.
It should have been 3-0.
Yeah, talk about schedule, coach.
Talk about schedule.
Looking at their schedule, you figure the hardest game on there you thought would be the Utah game, right?
BYU, yeah.
Yeah, BYU.
Yeah.
BYU.
Same thing.
So, yeah. So you thought the BYU would be the hardest game, but you thought they still would win.
Yep. And you probably should have.
And you probably should have, but with the exception of, you know, a breakdown in the coverage, then, you know, you don't win that game. But you go and you lose to Georgia State, which was just bad. You lose on the last play, and how you lost to BYU was bad. So it's like, okay, now how will this season end?
The lowers are so much lower than I anticipated.
Yeah.
But the highs were so much higher than I anticipated.
Because I don't think, you know, you had a shot. There was a point in the game versus Alabama where you could have
put
the pressure on them, you know, but it didn't happen. You beat Mississippi State.
Thanks for the reminder. Yeah. We appreciate that.
You beat Mississippi State. You beat South Carolina. And then you beat a good Kentucky team. Not great, but they're good.
They're going to go to a bowl game this year, and you won on the road with a goal line. Now, you needed a goal line stand against a triple option offense.
Yeah, but you got it.
To do it, but you won.
But
that's all that
matters. But you got it.
Yeah.
So you start to look at this season, and you thought, okay, first 3 games, win. We got them. So we starting off 3-0. And then we get into a patch where, at worst, we are 4-2 because we got Florida and Georgia in there. At worst, we are 4-2 because Mississippi State, a toss-up game, so to speak.
It was a swing game, yeah.
Knew you were going to lose to Alabama. So it was the last 5 games of the season that we thought that would make or break their season, because we thought at this point they would be either 500 or right above 500.
How much does this conversation change if they lose to Missouri, beat Vanderbilt, they go 6-6, they get to a bowl game? I think it feels a little different if you lose to Missouri, because Missouri right now is playing such poor football on offense, and Tennessee is playing such good football on defense. The worst 4 outputs of Missouri football on offense have taken place in the last 4 games that they've played. They've lost all 4 of them. They've scored 1 touchdown in 12 quarters.
Well, if you lose to them, then people are going to say, well, Vandy beat them.
1 touchdown in 12 quarters.
No, you're right.
In college football, you know how hard that is? You know how hard it is to be that bad in college football on offense? Derek Dooley and the Doolander offense has scored 100 points on Tennessee in the last 2 games.
Mm-hmm.
If they score points on this defense the way they've been playing, it would be incredibly disappointing. I think the wrong team is favored. Missouri's a slight favorite in this game. I think Tennessee should be favored. They're the better team right now. They're playing far better football. Now, defensively, Missouri's better than people think. They played Florida well last week on that side of the ball. They just couldn't score at all on offense. So this has the feeling of another one of those Kentucky games where it's going to come down to a defensive play. It's going to be low scoring. It feels like a defensive struggle again, and Tennessee's ability to get stops on defense and run the football consistently on offense. I think we're talking and having this conversation like they're 7-5.
Yeah,
they still got a long way to go before they get to 7-5.
Yeah, they do. And all of that goodwill that they built up with beating South Carolina, beating UAB, beating Kentucky, all that goodwill they built up, beating Mississippi State. If they lose one of the next 2 games, it's all gone. I think they still,
especially
would,
Vanderbilt at home,
they still would make a bowl game. But if they lose any one of these games, all of that is gone. Because if they lose to Missouri, the thought is, well, Vandy beat them.
Well, and
they've been playing poorly on offense.
And the thought that creeps into your head is, So, like, if you win all these, I feel like this is what happens. If you win these last two games and you're Tennessee, it sort of erases what happens in week two, 1-2. Yeah. It erases it because you say, no, you know what matters? We're 5-3 in the SEC. We won six straight, and that was a different team, and we're a new team now. We've gotten better, and the coaching staff has done an excellent job making us a better team. The seniors took some ownership. The young players are developing. All the good stuff, right? But if you lose to Missouri and you finish 6-6, doesn't it allow your brain to sort of go, well, man, I still saw this team get boat raced by Georgia State. I still saw this team make a major mistake against BYU. They still were not competitive against Florida and Georgia in the second half. There's still questions there. I feel pretty good about the direction of the program. But, man, it's not like I'm not as excited as in the offseason as it could be. So there's a chance here for Jeremy Pruitt to really catapult his program into the offseason. There's also a chance if you lose to Missouri, a team that you probably should beat, in my opinion, that it brings up all these questions that you may have had throughout the course of the year. And either way, getting to a bowl game, you got to beat Vanderbilt.
I think that's the main goal right now, is to get to a bowl game. Vol fans, you hadn't experienced a bowl game in the last couple of years. Get to a bowl game, and then we can go from there. Get to a bowl game. Win. Get six games up under your belt. Hopefully the sixth game is this week versus Missouri, but get six games under your belt. And then I think some of the pressure of the team is off.
Yep.
If you don't get it this week, I think the pressure increases to beat Vanderbilt.
Oh, you play. I think they would still crush Vanderbilt, but it's not been a guarantee, and I think you'd play real puckered up in the first half of that game.
So they got to win this Missouri game.
So really, really interesting weekend in the SEC. Tennessee-Missouri, one of the bigger games in the SEC. Georgia hosts Texas A&M in a huge game with playoff implications for Georgia. They've got to maintain status quo, and they've got to beat LSU in the title game to get into the playoff, but their path is still very much available for them. But I got a philosophical question, and I know, by the way, Penn State-Ohio State's the biggest game of the weekend coming up. That game you can hear right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game tomorrow, I believe at 11 a.m. kickoff for Penn State and Ohio State. And our guy back here is doing pregame, basically. Check out Marquise at 9 a.m.
I always
do pregame, though.
Yeah. It's just Munson.
Just Munson?
Just Munson.
What about Keese?
No.
Keys,
are you offended by that?
I'm fine with that.
That's for the streets.
That is for the streets. I will say that.
But is it cool for, like, your teammates to call you Keys?
Yeah.
No, that's for the streets, man.
But it's like hockey nicknames.
Off the air, we can call him Keys.
Not on the air?
No, not on the air.
On the air, you can just call me Munson.
Munson on the air.
But you sound like a really old, nerdy white guy.
Munson is the name.
But that's the shock factor. Then exactly. I show like up with my gold chain and my Jordans, and then it's like, what up, Munson? Nice to meet
Everybody's
you.
Everybody's like, whoa.
But it turns it to Keese.
Notice why I never want to use my last name on anything. I hate my last name. It's terrible.
Yeah. Urkel and Steve, the one that
showed up in that show like all jacked up and like no glasses
Stefan.
Urkel and Stefan.
Hey,
so
y'all,
you're Munson, and then when you leave here, you're Keese.
All right.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Cool. All right.
Glad
we got that cleared up.
Yeah, Saturday, I'll be talking 1 hour of Tua and his injury and nothing else, because there's nothing else going on in college football. But
what are you talking about? You got Penn State, Ohio State, you got Georgia, Texas A&M, you got Tennessee, Missouri.
They don't care about that.
Nobody wants an hour of Tua.
Yes, I'm joking.
Maybe like 10 minutes of Tua.
Yeah, well, yeah, Penn State, Ohio State, and three segments of Tua, so go ahead.
Don't try to explain away Nick Saban's decision to Derek Mason, though. He might yell at you, and then we might have to cut you off there.
Yeah. don't come at me like that, bro.
Aaron settles tomorrow, possibly.
Don't come at me, bro.
Working on that interview.
All right. I have a philosophical question for SEC fans. It's the same discussion and topic we've used every year at this time, but I've got a new spin on it, and I want to know what SEC football fans have to say about that. We'll have some time for your phone calls, and we'll get into that when we return. Hour number two, right around the corner, Morning Drive, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.